Welcome to PwC Speak, the language of executives, a podcast created to share the stories of the most successful, innovative, and inspirational leaders in Los Angeles. I'm Josh Schimmels, publisher and CEO of the Los Angeles Business Journal, and I'm here with my co-host, Todd Wilson, regional president of Greater Los Angeles for PNC Bank.
Thanks, Josh. It's great to be here for another exciting discussion.
All right, today we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to take two topics that most people don't necessarily put in the same conversation, particularly here in Los Angeles. Let's talk about parking and let's talk about AI, because that's what our guest today has done. He's used technology and AI to really revolutionize parking.
You know, Josh, I can't tell you how much time I've wasted trying to find a good parking spot, trying to understand the signs on the side of the street, or do the mental math of can I park here, then, where, and when. Whether it's circling around endlessly or trying to figure my way through payment machines that take some cards and not others, parking in Los Angeles and other major cities has always been a challenge. What if it was not a hassle? What if it was seamless, fast, and smart? Well, that's exactly what our next guest, Alex Israel, and his team at Metropolis Technologies are working on to achieve on a nationwide basis.
It's really amazing to see. They're leveraging their advanced computer vision platform to enable what has become a very seamless, checkout-free payment experience. And I think it's really cool because we've all been frustrated trying to leave parking garages. And at the heart of the technology is Alex's vision for scaling innovation and shaping the future of urban spaces.
Earlier this year, Metropolis completed the take private of SP Plus Corporation, a 100-year-old legacy parking operator. They did this through a $1.8 billion financing, cementing its position as the largest parking network and operator in North America. This gives them more than 4,000 locations, 20,000 employees, and 50 million customers.
In today's conversation, we are going to learn more about his journey becoming a co-founder and a CEO. We're going to ask him about his vision for the future of urban technology. And of course, we want to know about his challenges, both from the past and looking forward, and the opportunities that he sees ahead of us, not just for today's leaders, but tomorrow's leaders as well in the tech space. I'm excited. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Alex, it's a pleasure to have you on. Welcome to C-Speak.
It's great to be here. Thank you for everything you do for Los Angeles and for Angelenos. Been a huge supporter of Los Angeles Business Journal and PNC for a long time now.
Thank you so much. There's a lot to get in here. Let's start with your background. I'm always curious to know about how people get started, especially in what we do. We tell stories at the Business Journal. We tell people stories. We tell the stories of business. Can you share a bit about your professional journey before co-founding Metropolis? And also, how did those prior experiences help shape your leadership style today?
I like to say, for better or worse, I'm a tech entrepreneur. I guess a serial tech entrepreneur at this point. This is the second company I've co-founded, the third company I've been a part of. I took a not so traditional or circuitous path to getting to this position. I grew up, born and raised in Los Angeles, left for college, came back for graduate school to actually study film. So I have a master's degree in film, which is not what you normally find in a tech executive.
I might not have guessed that, no.
But, you know, there's actually a lot of similarity. I mean, you create a film, you take something from abstraction, you bring it to fruition. I fell in love with filmmaking. And then right as I was completing my master's thesis, I realized that there was a really prolific opportunity to build a technology company, build technology startups, and then fell in love with building tech.
That's fascinating. You just never know what backgrounds are going to take us to where we are today. I appreciate you sharing that. On the leadership side, what would you say from your prior experiences has helped shape your style today from a leadership standpoint?
I think at Metropolis, we've spent a lot of time thinking about our values and how we lead as an organization. Fundamentally, as a technology company, you have to spend a lot of time thinking about the different stages of a company's history and how those values and your leadership style evolve. We focus on three core leadership principles: innovation, ownership, and we talk about leadership. We think about this idea that there's no other room, that it's that tight-knit group of people, and those are the people that are going to bring change. This idea of entrepreneurship, this idea of challenging the status quo. For me, leading an organization of 23,000 people, you have to spend a lot of time with your team. You have to spend a lot of time empathizing with your team, understanding both the product challenges, physical challenges, life challenges. And I think that more than anything else, it's about building a dynamic whereby you're you're really working on a day in and day out basis for your employees, for your team members. Everyone at Metropolis, we call Metropolites. People spend time in the field. They want to build remarkable products and ship remarkable products. But the first and foremost responsibility of a leader is to build a remarkable experience for their culture, for their employee base.
That's so important. I mean, we at the Business Journal, we've had an opportunity to follow your company's success and write about the history over the last several years. But for those of our listeners who may not be as familiar with the company, tell us a little bit more about Metropolis. How is it impacting them in ways that they may not even realize today? And then how do you set yourself apart from other players in the space? Tell us more.
You know, we set out to build this company right at the beginning of 2017. We founded Metropolis in a garage with three other co-founders. We set out to really take advantage and look at secular trends, one in artificial intelligence, two in computer vision, and three in the future of mobility. What is mobility going to look like? We hear so much about autonomous vehicles and next generation mobility like vertical takeoff and landing, but how are those secular trends going to come together and how are they going to affect our day-to-day lives? So we set out to build an artificial intelligence company for the real world. How can we take advantage of those secular trends and really affect people's day-to-day lives? Most of our lives are riddled with little annoyances, whether it's waiting in line to check out at a grocery store, whether it's waiting to park, whether it's finding parking, whether it's sitting in a drive-thru. You don't actually want to be engaged in those experiences. You want to get your food, go home, be with your family. Yeah. You don't want to be waiting to get into a stadium to park. You want to be in the stadium. The question internally was, could we leverage artificial intelligence? Could we leverage computer vision to put a solution forth that would solve those problems? And the first vertical that we settled on was parking. We realized that it was a pain point that's everywhere, that everyone has this visceral reaction to. And it represents, in a city like Los Angeles, more than 15% of the surface area of our city. So we could really make an immediate impact. So we've onboarded more than, actually at this point, 11 million members on our platform. We're adding a new member onto our platform every 4 seconds across the United States.
So we just added a few hundred just since we started.
The idea was, could you create a seamless checkout-free experience? So if you think about parking, this idea that you could pull into a parking facility, get a text message when you arrive, and seamlessly pull out and get charged. None of the traditional pain points associated with parking. No tickets, no wallets, no phones. Just pull in, get a text message when you arrive, and are seamlessly charged when you leave. The question for me, and I think the question we should be asking each of ourselves, is how does then that technology expand to other verticals?
Yeah.
How do we think about drive-thrus, car washes, gas stations, charging? Because there's so many of these little frustrations that take away time, take away our most precious asset. So the question is, how do we scale even further?
So it sounds like when you go back to that garage and you and your three founders were sitting around, you knew you wanted to use AI, you knew you wanted mobility efficiency. Was parking the clear answer to that, or were there others that you bounced around during that time?
Oh, we bounced all over the place. I mean, we launched with parking, but we spent a lot of time thinking about what should be that first vertical. Mm-hmm. We thought, should it be car washes? Should it be gas stations? We weren't really sure, but the pervasiveness of parking, the visceral reaction. I mean, you say the word parking, everyone has an amazing, immediate visceral reaction, especially us Angelenos. So we settled on parking.
When you do see the technology now, it's growing and it's being used everywhere and people are embracing it, like the new Intuit Dome. Most of the stadium, you go to concessions, you grab popcorn, you grab a drink, you just walk right out. The technology is being embraced, not just by industry, but by patrons.
One of the things we like to say internally is that we're long vision. And I don't mean the traditional mission, vision, values. We truly believe we can leverage computer vision and the future will be enabled by computer vision, just like you described in the stadium. You won't have to use your phone. Naturally, we think about it kind of a linear progression of technology. Internally, we think about it a lot more exponentially. So it's not moving from credit cards to tap with phone.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you have to pay at all? You should just be able to walk out. You should just be able to drive out. That's the kind of future that we're bringing to fruition.
So how do you foster this sort of innovation with your teams at Metropolis to make sure you're staying ahead of the curve?
I would say there are a few things. We come back to this idea of our values. How do we live and embody our values? One of our core values is challenging the status quo. And that means we challenge not only one another, but we challenge core ideas. This idea that maybe the wallet or the phone isn't necessary. We want to minimize it. We want people never to pull out their phone ever again. We want them to just drive in and drive out. So for us, it's about these simple, I don't know if it's evolutions or epiphanies that are right in front of us. How do we take advantage of them? How do we challenge what our preconceived notions? This idea that we're always going to have to sit in traffic. This idea that we're always going to have to wait in line. This idea that parking's always going to be a pain. We're kind of just complicit in this cycle. So we spend a lot of time kind of turning assumptions on their head internally and challenging one another.
So this is completely seamless to the consumer or the user.
Completely seamless.
There's no activity they need to take. It just happens around and to them. It
just happens. Why do we have to check out at a grocery store? Why do we have to check out at a drive-thru? Can we leverage computer vision? And in this case, we're building neural networks that create a fingerprint of your vehicle. We identify your vehicle every time it pulls in and out of one of our locations.
So as you know, Alex, I spent some time in the private equity world. And one of the major themes in private equity is taking kind of old world businesses and bringing a non-traditional approach to them. Now, you've done this to the 100th or 1,000th degree with buying parking lots and somehow making them so smart. Talk about building this and the challenges you faced in scaling.
Todd, look, we founded the company very much as a traditional technology company. And in most ways, we are still very much a traditional technology company. The difference is when we founded the company, we found what most startups dream of, product market fit and unit economic fit, and we found it fast. What we didn't find was rapid go-to-market. And the reason we couldn't find rapid go-to-market is we were dealing with a huge disparate segment of our population, which is real estate owners. And real estate owners like consistency.
And this is on parking garage owners, right?
These are most of the largest real estate owners. Think about who owns most of the parking in the United States. It's the Class A office buildings. It's the Class B office buildings. It's the multifamily developers. It's all the traditional names in real estate. Yep. They're not risk takers. They invest in picks and shovels. They're not engaging startups for the next generation. They want to make sure their tenants are happy at all times. It's fundamental blocking and tackling ones and zeros. So if you're a startup and you go to a traditional real estate developer and you say, I have this cool technology we'd like to bring, they say, why don't you come back in 30 years? So we realized we had to take a non-traditional path to growth. So we invented what we coined internally as a GBO, which is a growth buyout. This idea that we could actually buy growth. And we did exactly that. So we bought old world businesses, but by layering on tech, you create a traditional, to an extent, non-traditional private equity model. You have all the upside potential of a venture play and all the downside risk mitigation of a private equity play.
Your passion's incredible as I'm listening to you and your storytelling of the way your company was founded. And it's all big picture. It comes from ideas and innovation. How do you take that big picture vision where you just want to do everything and then translate it into day-to-day operational demands of the company and the business? How do you do that?
So I would say as a leadership team, there's a balance in this idea of vision and how you build a hyperscaler, how you build a business that builds businesses, and at the same time, focusing on core blocking and tackling. Mm-hmm. I would say internally, the way we facilitate core blocking and tackling is strategic alignment, role clarity, and strategic clarity. We set very explicit objectives.
Okay.
And then we roll those through the organization associated with everyone's individual role. And we have found that to be phenomenally effective.
So, Alex, a lot of your growth has been accelerated or driven by finding the right partners, right? Whether it's financial partners, strategic partners, et cetera. Talk about how these partners have played a role in you growing your business.
You know, we've been very lucky. We've raised over $2 billion for one of the fastest growing payments companies in the United States. We're one of the most well-funded artificial intelligence companies in the United States. We've been really lucky to put together an amazing syndicate of investors. Our most recent round, which was right around $1.8 billion, that was inclusive of Eldridge, Todd Boehly, Tony Manila, bring together BDT and MSD, bring together Temasek, Vista, 3L. We've been really lucky not only in bringing capital to bear, but strategic capital, people that really want to spend the time.
That was intentional, I'm sure, on your behalf.
100%. I mean, capital at its core, Todd, it's, you're intimately familiar, is a commodity.
I work for a bank, remember?
Yeah. It's a commodity. Cash is a commodity. What's not a commodity?
You have to be value added.
So I spend a massive amount of my time engaging with my investors.
And I assume it's your investors and their network and portfolio companies and all that.
100%. And it's not just me reaching out to them. It's them calling me on a daily basis right. saying this opportunity came up, and they're constantly talking about our business. And that is the value that's driven by that is unparalleled. Every time we raise money, we want to bring additional capital onto our balance sheet, and we want it to be strategic capital, whether it's real estate investors or whether it's investors with large networks.
So let's pivot here for a second, Alex, to the customer and the customer experience. I think many of us have had healthy, productive, efficient experiences with technology, but others of us have also had clunky and inefficient experiences, whether it's at a stadium, at a grocery store, where the tech just doesn't do what it was intended to do. How do you ensure that your customers are getting the best and optimal customer experience?
I would say there's two things, Todd: agility and obsession. So agility in the context that we're not going to get it right. You have to rapidly iterate.
You know it's not going to be right the first
you
time.
You know it's not going to be right. You know it's not going to be right the second time. And you know you're going to release new features constantly to try to make the product better. So on one side, it's a constant agile environment where you're releasing new features. You're creating a feedback loop with your customers to make the product better.
How do you create that feedback loop?
So I think it actually comes to the second point, which is obsession. This idea that you are hyper-focused on driving value. You're hyper-consumed, obsessed with the consumer. And what you're doing is not only are you directly engaging the consumer, you're also understanding the analytics of your platform. So you're leveraging data to understand how your products are being used. What do people love? What do they not like? How do you fix the things they don't like about your products? And how do you pour gasoline all over the components and features that they do like? What I'll also add, Todd, is I'm a huge advocate of this idea that you have to innovate and the consumer doesn't always know what they want.
It sounded much like Steve Jobs as you were talking there.
Look, I don't love, for a lot of reasons, also, I love Steve Jobs, but there's a lot of reasons I don't love quoting the next person, Henry Ford. But Henry Ford said that if I had asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. Huh. Right? What's so important in being a product-led organization is you seek feedback. So you're going out into the market, talking to customers. But then you have to take that data and create an informed opinion and create something innovative on top of that. You have to drive irrefutable value and differentiation for a consumer to see value.
Well, you talk about your customers and taking feedback and the importance of listening and evolving. You mentioned the word culture earlier. We talk about culture in this podcast. We write about it in the Business Journal, how important it is to drive businesses. People drive business. Culture drives people. So tell us a little bit about the role that culture has played in your organization. And maybe tell us, what is your culture? What does it look like?
When we did this last acquisition, I think there's a famous Peter Drucker quote that culture eats strategy for breakfast. Mm-hmm. It's true. These best laid plans that every executive and every consultant puts forward, they fall flat on their face. They run full speed into a wall the second culture gets in the way. Culture empowers everything, down to the last dollar. The way we think about culture is a willingness to innovate and own our solutions. There's this mentality sometimes within technology companies and organizations that's beneath me. I don't need to own that. I'm not responsible for that. And I would say at Metropolis, we think about things completely differently. There isn't someone else. If you see something that can add value, you should step up and drive that value. So this idea of entrepreneurialism and this idea that nothing is beneath me, this idea that I can participate in every component of value that's driven in our company and that I can make a significant individual difference.
Well, you said three words that I think are so important for our listeners. Culture empowers everything.
Absolutely. And I think about this idea of strategic clarity and role clarity. And with that, embodying your values. We talk about our values all the time: innovation, ownership, and leadership. And you hear me talking about it on the podcast because I'm talking about it with my team members. And we want it to be ingrained in everything that they do.
So coming to this idea of innovation, you talked about artificial intelligence and AI, and this is really the foundation of the business. Talk about how you guys use AI to really enhance the customer experience.
You know, we talk a lot these days about large language models. We talk about innovation in the palm of our hands. What we talk a little less about is how it affects our day-to-day lives. So what we've done, Todd, internally, is we leverage neural networks to build products that we can actually implement into the real world that change how you interact on your day-to-day life. First, starting with parking. So what we've done is we've built a camera-based solution that creates a fingerprint of your vehicle, understands the direction of travel of your vehicle, and so uniquely identifies your vehicle that if a similar make, model, year drives through right after you, we know which vehicle is yours. So we believe that this would not have been possible 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. Camera technology is as old as the camera. What isn't is being able to take advantage of frontier technology and frontier neural network technology that allows us to leverage the solutions that we're providing.
So you obviously have leveraged AI. Talk to a little bit about our listeners who are out there trying to figure out, you know, what can they do with their business? How can they integrate AI into their operations to help solve real-world problems?
People ask me all the time, what aspect of our lives will not be impacted by artificial intelligence? If you are starting a startup today or you own a Fortune 10 company, you should be thinking about how you can leverage artificial intelligence. The real question is, what aspect of our businesses is not going to be affected? You think about industrial revolutions historically. What's really happened is repurposing unskilled labor. What's happening in this revolution is the repurposing of skilled labor. What do you do if you've been a designer for 30 years and are being replaced by artificial intelligence? What do you do if you're a lawyer who's been a lawyer and a partner at a very successful law firm and you're going to be replaced by artificial intelligence? You've built a career. This isn't about the replacement of
a factory line worker.
That's not what this industrial revolution is propagating. It's something different altogether.
Well, here we are, almost 5 years post-pandemic when it all started, and so much has changed. We've seen industry change. We've seen new industry come of it. We've seen industry struggle. The pandemic shaped and reshaped urban parking needs. What lessons did you take away that came out of the pandemic and what we learned?
I think the better question is, how did we reshape our business? It changed everything. So if you think about the parking industry basically hadn't had a down year in 100 years. It's completely immune to macroeconomic change. Everyone has to go somewhere. Everyone parks, except for COVID. No one went anywhere. Everyone was locked in their homes. So for us as a business, it changed everything. It forced innovation. This is when we invented the growth buyout. This is when we conceptualized the GBO. We're sitting at home, locked in our rooms, separated from our friends, separated from our colleagues, and we had to facilitate a way to grow. I couldn't even sit down with real estate owners. So what were we going to do? We're going to have to buy old world businesses and deploy our technology to scale.
Well, that's an interesting point. As I look at our financials every year, I always look at our rent cost, our parking cost, and they're always separate. And I always ask, why does our parking cost go up every single year, no matter what? And to your point, it's because it's had that demand for the last 100 years.
You know, the industry as a whole really hasn't evolved in 100 years. It's had that fundamental demand since the propagation of the vehicle.
So it hadn't changed in 100 years, and then it got turned upside down on March of 2020, I guess. What happens for the next decade? How does parking change, and how do you guys drive that?
Internally, we like to say we're just getting started. So if you think about our platform, the question is going to be, how does our platform scale not only from 11 million members today to 50 million members tomorrow, but how do we scale to the drive-thru you love, the gas station you love, the charging station? Think about what parking is going to look like in 10, 20, 30 years. Think about the idea of finding the highest and best use for land. For me, as a mobility, transportation, AI nerd, I spent a lot of time thinking about how parking will transform from a static, relatively unused asset today to a mobility hub, facilitating the cleaning, servicing, charging, and deployment of autonomous vehicles, vertical takeoff and landing drones. How does the land find a higher and better use? Cars aren't going to circle the block endlessly waiting for their next job. They're going to go somewhere. They're going to be cleaned, serviced, charged, and deployed, and they're going to be redeployed on their next job, on their next trip.
And it's interesting because it's not going to be me who's doing that. It's going to be the software that's driving that. I'm going to get dropped off somewhere, get out, and then whenever I need a car, I'm going to just request a new car.
And they're going to come from a Metropolis location.
Having been cleaned, serviced, charged, all of that.
All of the above.
You shared earlier about the growth of the company. And just a few months ago, we at the Business Journal recognized your company on our list of fastest growing private companies in Los Angeles. And we continue to see that growth, which is really impressive year after year. So congratulations, first off, on that accomplishment. My question is, why Los Angeles?
So why Los Angeles? One, I love this city. One of my other co-founders is from this city. Another one of my co-founders lives in this city. And this is where we first encountered the problem. Whether sitting in traffic, waiting in line to check out at a store, or trying to find parking or pay for parking, the problem here felt so visceral. So we wanted to deploy the solution where it affected our lives most. I'm a huge advocate of building products that you use yourself.
Well, we certainly will use this product here in Los Angeles, probably more than most cities.
So, look, I love the city, and the city has been the home of this startup, the home of my last startup. The ability to hire remarkable talent in this city is profound. The creative talent that comes to this city is profound. And this idea of challenging the status quo that we talked about earlier, there's this ingrained artistic mentality in our city. While we're a phenomenally disparate city, it's a phenomenally creative and passionate city. The amount of talent that's either moving to this city or that already exists in this city is a true opportunity for innovation.
I think you hear so often companies talk about access to capital, but access to talent, without that, we can't grow, we can't build, we can't be the businesses that we are.
Every company that I've founded, and as I become a better leader, I'm constantly learning. I think about this construct of tours of duty, this idea that the person to build an organization from $1 million of revenue to $5 million is very different than the team you need to build a company from $5 million of revenue to $20 billion of revenue. It's constantly a tour of duty, surrounding yourself with the best possible talent. And for me, bringing in the best possible talent means that you're hiring people at their jobs that are remarkably better at their jobs than you would ever be. I love this mantra that you're hiring, always hiring people that are smarter than you. You want to be the dumbest person in the room.
Yep.
Constantly. Especially in a leadership position.
Alex, what you've done has been so impressive. Going back to your days in film school and all of a sudden leading a true unicorn in the AI and technology space. What drives you? What drives you at your core?
You know, when I think about what drives me most in life is my family. I'm married. I have three kids. I'm constantly on the road. I'm driven by my family. I'm driven by my team. I'm driven by this idea of how I can drive value to their lives. And I think a lot about this idea that every moment I'm away from my family, how am I doing something that's impactful to make up for that time? Making sure that I'm driving value to them and that I'm driving value to the tens of thousands of Metropolites.
Right. Make it count. If you're going to be away, make every minute count.
Make it count.
Absolutely. Well, you've done an unbelievable job of that for sure.
Thank you.
Well, Alex, although I knew you before, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you better and having you on the show today. Your insights into the future of urban technology, urban mobility, and the incredible journey of Metropolis, and the lessons you've learned along the way have been truly inspiring to us, and I'm sure our listeners. It's clear that you and your team are doing something transformative in the world and in the cities, and I can't wait to see what's next for Metropolis.
Josh and Todd, it's been wonderful to be here with you today and spend more time on the podcast. I can tell you I've been looking for this type of community and this type of innovation and leadership for a long time. So thank you guys for what you're doing for Los Angeles, for Angelenos. It means a great deal to me. And I know it means a great deal to our community. Thank you more than anything else to LA Business Journal and to PNC.
Well, Alex, thanks again. We've had the opportunity to write about your company. It's been an absolute pleasure to get to meet you in person. Super impressive what you're doing. Look forward to seeing what's next. So thank you for the time. Thank you for making the space to come together and to share your story. On behalf of the Los Angeles Business Journal and PNC Bank, I want to thank all of you for listening. And to ensure that you're notified about our future podcast releases, please be sure to subscribe or follow. Thank you again. We look forward to hosting you on the next episode of PNC C-Speak, the language of executives.